Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I don't know if politics have much to do with this or not, but talking about USC and UCLA, that bombshell yesterday in the world of college football.
That definitely has to do with politics.
They've finalized plans now to leave Pac-12. It's been approved. It's going to happen as early as 2024, last I checked.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, I did some digging, like, myself on this. Like, I don't know that these types of things have been reported or if they're even connected. But we mentioned politics. And there's reasons behind everything. And typically you can follow the money in these instances, right?
Yes.
However, I do want to mention this. With USC and UCLA, moving from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, which now when they move in 2024, the Big Ten would really become effectively like the Big 16.
Yeah.
You know,
the numbers are just part of the name brands now.
Right.
They're not going to make sense.
If you're not going to make sense geographically, go ahead and just make sense with the conference name. Like, don't make it easy. Make something easy for us.
They should do with the conferences, Sean, what they've been doing with the bowls, where you've got the, you name it, Business Bowl. You know, that should just be what the conference, somebody should just sponsor the conference. Ooh, the money in that.
From a business point of, that's a hell of an idea.
Hey, mark that down, Ben, and don't podcast this. Let's take this back to the back studio and flesh this idea out after the show.
Yeah, you could come, boy, there you'd come up with some doozies right there, man. But I do want to make this point, okay? With USC and UCLA going from Pac-12 to the Big Ten, there was a question asked by one national writer yesterday if it undermines the two conferences agreement, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, that they made this past year. It's not even a year old pact. That was an alliance of sorts in terms of, like, I guess, continuing to try and compete with the SEC
mm-hmm.
and the growing of the power conferences in the landscape of college football. Does this undermine that pact, that alliance? Well, I mean, I guess you could make the argument that it could, because what's in it for the Pac-12 to lose these two programs? Well, before I wanted to answer that question, I had to ask more. I was like, well, why are these two teams leaving in the first place? Why would they want to leave the Pac-12? You remember the Pac-12 when COVID hit, you know, there was that whole thing like, well, we're going to cancel the season.
Yeah.
And then it was like, we're going to play an abbreviated season. They played an abbreviated season. If you play an abbreviated season, that means you're making abbreviated dollars.
Right.
Okay. That's where I just had to do a double take on the amount of money lost in the fiscal year for 2021 compared to other conferences. The Pac-12 in the fiscal year of 2021 made $19.8 million per school. Compare that to the SEC, 54.6. Big Ten, 46.1.
Not a comparison.
ACC, 36.6 million
yeah.
per school now. Big 12, 35.6. The Pac-12 from 2020 to 2021 lost nearly $25 million in revenue per school. So that's the conference alone. Now, what about the school in itself? I looked at UCLA. Alone for UCLA over the course of the past 3 years, they've seen a nearly $103 million deficit in their programs, in all of their athletic programs. They haven't operated in the red since 2004.
Got it.
So you look at those hard numbers and you look at what these other conferences are making with TV deals and, you know, other ways of revenue, sponsorships, and what's allocated per school versus what you're seeing at the Pac-12 level.
Right.
I get that. But the Pac-12 and Big Ten just formed an alliance last year to stay competitive with the SEC. So is this like the demise of the Pac-12? Because you want to talk about power conferences and what we talked about happening over the course of probably the last 5 years now of like these super conferences coming into power, like where you're going to have these 16-team conferences. We got a couple of them now already, and one with 14. The SEC becomes 16 in 2025 when OU and Texas join.
Yep.
Okay.
Unless they figure out a way to pay that money and go sooner, which is an option.
Like U of H and UCF.
Correct.
And all
and
them
BYU,
to leave.
All the
right.
American school or American athletic schools.
The Pac-12
the Big 12, yeah.
The Pac-12 is not going to dissolve, right? Like, what does this mean ultimately for the landscape of college football?
It is the question. It is the fascinating question. And I think it's important in the kind of the way you laid this out to remember as far as that alliance goes. And I had to give this a little bit of more thought last night when I'm, you know, kind of going over the topics. But we know this, the conferences and its member schools don't necessarily have the same interest. And in some cases, their interests conflict because in this case, it's the schools that are at the top of the conference. You know, they look at themselves differently from the schools that are at the bottom. Right. So Texas and the Big 12 views itself far differently than, you know, Texas Tech or whoever you want to think about, than Oklahoma State or whatever. And in the Pac-12, UCLA and USC view themselves demonstrably differently than Oregon State and Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for them, they're the ones who are the money makers. They don't necessarily, if they have an opportunity to stay viable and to stay the big dog as they already are,
mm-hmm.
their loyalties are more so to themselves as opposed to the conference that they're in. So like their loyalty to conference is fluid based off of where can they go and make the most money to the point that you just laid out.
Right.
So yes, is the answer to the question of, does it undermine that alliance? Absolutely. Because that alliance probably was never worth the paper that it was written on unless you could match it with, hey, here's what this alliance actually looks like. Hey, the SEC is expanding. Okay, between the Big Ten and the Pac-12, we're going to take our best eight in each conference. And that's what we're looking at eventually, Sean, right? The best of each conference is going to combine with the best of another conference, right? So whether that's the Pac-12 and the Big 12 or the ACC merging into, like, it's teams splitting into the SEC and whatever's left of the Big 12. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
we're going to see a hodgepodge of all of the what's remaining of the conference.
So I thought about it like this. Like, when I saw that question initially asked by this national writer, CBS Sports.com, I can't think of his name right now, but, you know, does this undermine the two conferences agreement between the Pac-12 and the Big 10? Like, the easy answer, you know, on the surface is, well, yeah, of course this does. Like, what are they doing? They're killing the Pac-12 conference right now. And on behalf of that, like, now it just doesn't make geographical sense. Like, there's more money for travel, mm-hmm. you know, for these schools. And so I thought about it like, yes, but look at the timing of this, because TV contracts are up in a couple of years when these two schools would leave.
Correct.
So the amount of money that they would incur to have to pay their conference to leave to go to the Big Ten would be far less of a financial burden then at that point in time than it would be after the fact when that new TV deal is agreed upon.
Correct.
So maybe it doesn't necessarily undermine. Maybe it's a situation in which, like, look, it's going to have to hurt a little bit first before it gets better. Like, you're going to have to give a little before you get a little from the Pac-12. Quite similarly to maybe the Big 12, which, you know, a few years ago, they lose Texas A&M to the SEC. Now they're losing OU and UT to the SEC in 2025. But look what they gained. They gained U of H, BYU, UCF in Cincinnati from the American and what is it, the Midwest at the, what is it, the Western Conference or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. maybe the Pac-12 is looking at like schools from other conferences that they believe is going to, you know, benefit them 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Not only is it going to help those programs, those schools, but it's going to in turn make the Pac-12 conference stronger. So while the Pac-12 is effectively going to become the Pac-10 between now and 2024, potentially, depending on what else happens, they could still form a 16-team power conference themselves, depending on what other schools that they bring in.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it may not undermine it. Just it may seem like that at the point at this point in time.
Yeah, I think the Pac-12 and the Big 12, the first thing I thought when I saw this news was that the Pac-12 and the Big 12, at least as we know it, are dead. Now, and when I say that, what's really going to happen is this.
As a Cougar, that hurts my heart.
I know.
When you say
and I was just about to say, the real interesting local angle is how does this affect U of H that just feels like they found new money in joining the Big 12, and they are going to make more money in being in the Big 12. But now you're at a situation of, okay, the best of, the most profitable of the Pac-12 and the Big 12 are the ones that are going to survive and thrive. Where does U of H fall along the lines of those?
Yeah.
Right? And to me, they're somewhere good and viable between the success that they've had and the market that we have here in town. But it is much more of an interesting question today than it was a week ago.
At least for the next couple of years. Like when you say the Big 12 and Pac-12 is dying, is dead, right? Like that's a little bit down the road. Like to me, I'm looking at
that,
like,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Like at least U of H has, you know, where they're going is better than from which they'd come. You know, Conference USA and the American Conference. Now you get to play with the big dogs a little bit, put yourself on a bigger stage, and there's more opportunity. You know, this is going to be very, very good for you. It might be a little bit of a tough road, tougher road than what A&M experienced in the SEC in its early goings, and I think they did fairly well, but it's going to be an interesting follow. I just hope you're very wrong on the Big 12 and Pac-12 situation. He's Brandon Scott, Sean Bajani with you, in for Payne and Pendergast. Coming up next, two Astros that deserve way more credit than they're getting. That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I think they're pitching with a lot of confidence right now, and I think they've earned that. And you know, I think the guys are doing a really good job of attacking. And I think we're throwing a lot of strikes and expanding when we need to. But for the most part, it seems like they're just out there attacking the strike zone. And they have full confidence in what Maldi's calling behind the plate.
Welcome back, Sports Radio 610. He's Brandon Scott, Sean Bajani in for Payne and Pendergast this morning. Ben Gary producing. That was the voice of Alex Bregman talking postgame yesterday after the Astros' 2-1 victory over the Yankees. Being impressed by the aggressiveness of the Astro pitchers as a staff, really, in particular the starters, though, watching yesterday Luis Garcia go out there and do his thing and pitch a hell of a ball game while he had to labor through 5 1/3, put zeros up on the board in large part aside from that one mistake the costly one he made to Anthony Rizzo in the sixth inning.
And he might have even just been tired at that point.
Yeah, maybe so. Because, you know, the pitch count was up there. I forget what he finished with. It was 90-some-odd pitches.
It was in the 90s at that point, obviously. And, you know, they pulled him after that. So.
But, you know, Bregman, you know, he hit the nail on the head there. Just the aggressiveness and them just going out there and battling. Like, you talk about guys that deserve respect. People like Framber, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, like, they have to understand their role when you're on a staff with a guy like Justin Verlander, right? Like, You know you're not going to get the headlines. You know you're not going to get the throng of the media, the microphones, the cameras in your face, and things like that. You're not going to have to deal with that kind of attention anyway on a day-in and day-out basis, because there's so many other guys in that clubhouse that, you know, would typically command that level of attention, right?
Yeah,
they're going out there almost, I'm not going to say like pressure free, because you are pitching for the Houston Astros, a perennial World Series contender this day and age. But from an individual standpoint, I think they're taking the approach that, you know what, like, I'm here because they believe in me. They're not asking me to do anything that they don't think I'm already capable of. People just don't know me yet.
Yeah. Like, which is an interesting point, Sean, because don't you feel like maybe, and I don't know exactly who am I talking about here, because we all know them, obviously, as Astros fans and people who follow the team.
Right.
But I even wonder about the baseball community at large, right? I mean, I'm just curious. I don't have a good sense for this, a gauge for this, but I'm curious, because these guys have all, like the ones we're talking about right now,
mm-hmm.
have all pitched in big time postseason.
They've all proven themselves.
Yeah, yeah. They're all young, but they've all pitched big postseason innings, or at least a big postseason inning. Like, I'm thinking about game four of the ALCS last year with Christian Javier in Boston. You know, I'm thinking, you know, the World Luis Garcia in the World Series.
Sure.
You know, Jose Urquidy's pitched in two World Series,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and obviously has been around in between, though, in the year in between. So, you know, all of these guys at some point, and of course, Framber is, you know, easily their second best guy and has, you know, pitched the last couple of years, was amazing in the pandemic year in the postseason.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So all of them have had moments to highlight in the postseason on national stages to where, you know, if you say those names, they should be names that at least should ring a bell, you know. So to me, they are, it is interesting because they're in Verlander's shadow, but in and of themselves, speaking to your point about them having confidence, hey, I'm here for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, they've shown it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, they've proven
but like
that.
Why, you know, does a fan base look at it that way? Like, I feel like the pulse that I get is, we're constantly surprised by them. We're constantly like, man, I can't believe they're doing this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, look, you shouldn't expect, like, there are not a lot of staffs. Like, it doesn't happen all of the time. Like, this is a very special moment within a season, right?
Yeah.
Like, a section of a season in which you are getting some terrific performances. They're all going to go through their ups and downs. We've already seen Verlander have a couple of really bad starts, like, you know, uncharacteristic of him, whether it be this season or 10 seasons ago. Like,
right.
Uncharacteristic performances for him, right?
Yeah.
Like, where he just gets knocked around, or he doesn't have his control, or he doesn't have his off-speed stuff working that night, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think he's only got, like, two of those this year.
Yeah, it's two or three, I know.
Yeah.
These guys are going to have the ebb and flow to the season, too. They're not going to finish the year out averaging seven innings per. Like, I actually wanted to talk about that at some point, because I think it was here I wanted to mention, like, Luis Garcia went 5 1/3 last night.
Right.
Okay. Pitched a really good ball game. It was laborsome a little bit. Like, he had to really work on some hitters. Pitch count was up. Didn't get through six. But
and threw it doesn't up zeros,
go,
though.
It threw up zeros. Didn't go down as a quality start. I would
got to go six for a quality start.
Yeah, but the argument that I want to make to that is, like, that's almost like a microcosm of what people criticize baseball for already, like being stuck in the past. Like, a quality start has been defined as six innings and giving up three runs or fewer. That is a quality start, okay? But Look at the trend over the course of the last 10 years in Major League Baseball. Your starting pitchers average on a whole for the entire league has gone from an even six innings pitched in 2012 to, at last check, the latest numbers that I could get for this season dates back to mid-May, where starting pitchers are averaging 4.96 innings pitched.
Yeah.
And you're using an average of 3.5 relievers per game. Okay, so if you're expecting less of your starting pitchers, then shouldn't the quality start stat metric change as well?
I had not thought about this.
Look at, like,
this is interesting.
Look at the first game that Luis Garcia in particular threw this season. His first game was April 12th. He threw four innings of scoreless baseball. That's not a quality start. He was on a pitch count. He threw 71 pitches that game. Okay, yeah. Like, that should go down as a quality start. If you go back, if you go by the rule, right, that it is now six innings, three runs or fewer,
right,
he only has five quality starts. But if you really look at the starts, where he's gone five even or five and a third or even four, he should have 10 quality starts this season.
I have not considered lowering the standard for quality start. I'm not sure. How, like, you... I'm a little bit surprised that this is your take a little bit, Sean, and not because you're like old school or anything, but it seems like, do you not think maybe the undervaluing of the starter, like, is that a good thing? Like, or how do we feel about the very fact, before we make the argument, how do we even feel about the very fact that is, that starters are being used less and being asked to do less? And that you're having more bullpen games. Like, I feel like there's already an argument against that to begin with. That, hey, stop that. Let your starter go six and let him go seven. Let him go three times through the order.
It comes down to one thing, like usage. And the more usage,
right, yeah, yeah,
the more susceptible you are to injury. The more susceptible you are to injury, the more likely it is that you're missing time. The more time that you miss, the more money that we're paying you to miss time. Like, we're trying to get enough out of you, not everything we can get out of you.
Yeah.
Like, there is such a, and I'd like to hear Adam Spillane's take on this. He's on with Landry Locker coming up at 10 on In the Loop today, in for John Lopez. Maybe they'll get to this, maybe they won't, but Spo always has great baseball takes. I would just be interested to look further at the numbers. I did a little bit last night, just off the cuff, and the level of importance that is put on the middle reliever now throughout baseball is huge. I just gave you the hard numbers.
Yeah.
They're utilizing relievers almost, 3.67 times.
Oh, yeah, there's no disputing that.
Right? Okay, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
Middle relievers in Major League Baseball is the second least... What am I trying to say here? They get paid the least next to catchers.
Yeah.
Average of like $2.2 million, I think. And catchers average like around $2.1 million per year. Okay. What do your starters get paid now? Just go ahead and look at the Astros, starting pitcher salaries.
Verlander's making $25
million. He eats up a large portion of that, certainly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But maybe the six inning thing is, signifying three times through the order. Some of the more traditional baseball things that are important, like, is that's got to be part of it, right? Like, if you
can to get, me, it comes down to it being a 9-inning ball game.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Comes down to being a 9-inning ball game, and your job is to get through most of that. This day and age.
Yeah.
I guarantee you talk to most managers. That's why they employ so many pitchers. That's why they're going to go with 14, maybe instead of 13 on a staff.
Fair enough.
713-572-4610. If you'd like to weigh in on that call or text, he's Brandon Scott, Sean Bajani in for. Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, Deshaun Watson in his hearing has concluded no timetable for the ruling, but a simple solution to bring this all to a complete halt right now. And for you as a Houston Texan fan, the ability to move on now. That's next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Welcome back at Sports Radio 610. In for Payne and Pendergast, I am Sean Bajani. He is Brandon Scott. Ben Gary producing. 713-572-4610 if you'd like to get in. Call or text. You can tweet at us at Brandon K. Scott, at Sean Bajani. Love to hear from you. Good conversation on the Astros. We've got to pick a couple of things up. You know, the way that this team is going right now, like, we could spend a lot of time
for
on
sure.
them.
For sure.
Other things to get to as well.
It's the best team in baseball, Sean. I don't know if you've heard that.
It is.
But it is the best team in baseball.
I think you and I certainly, rightfully so, made that proclamation after them going 7-2 combined against the Yankees and Mets over the last 9-10 days. Rightfully so, despite records, what they say might be otherwise, but yes, this is the best team in baseball.
Well, because we also watched the two games that they lost and know that they should have won those games in an ideal situation, having led the entire game. And, you know, we wouldn't call it dominant necessarily, but you could call it dominant. You know, they certainly outplayed the Yankees in those two games. So, yeah.
Yes.
There's a reason.
Yeah, somebody
is the best team in baseball.
Somebody hit me up on Twitter.
It was Michael Beckman. He hit us both up.
Michael Beckman.
Yeah, Michael Beckman, loyal listener of the station, and especially a Payne and Pendergast. Shout out to Michael Beckman, you and your family, man.
His argument was it was starting pitching domination over the Yankees. They completely shut down the highest scoring team in baseball, and not just in runs, but lack of hits. They no-hit them one game. I call that domination. Yes, fair. There's no question about that.
We're not going to argue with you, Michael.
In my concession is when I hear domination, I'm thinking like, okay, like you strung together. If you've beaten the Yankees three out of five, like, and then, you know, you sweep a two-game set with the Mets at home and then you took care of them at their place as well. Like, I'm thinking like a whole bunch of games are like 6-2, 7-1, 10-0, you know, like dominant performances.
Yeah. And if you give the game up in the ninth and the 10th, can you call yourself, like, you can say that you were dominating, but ultimately you have to finish the game.
I think it was Landry and Lopez having this conversation the other day in the midst of that Yankees series, right? At the conclusion of the Yankees series, one of them asked either one of them the question, you know, like, how do you feel after the series?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Satisfied,
a
you know?
Empty, yeah.
Little, and I think it was Landry that maybe said, like, he left feeling, like, wanting
yeah.
more, like, yeah. disappointed. And I said, why? Like, this was the best team, not just in the American League, but all of baseball. And the best hitter in all of baseball, arguably right now, is Aaron Judge, the most fearsome. He beat you twice.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to take your lumps, but guess what? Like, you beat them twice. You split. This is what it's all about. We've been there, done that before already in the ALCS, you know, in a wild card matchup in years past, like, where the two best teams go at it. When two elite teams go at it, like, yeah, you're going to get your blows in. They're going to get their blows in. At the end of the day, we got an encore yesterday. The Astros yeah. took care of business without two of their best players in the lineup, by the way, in Alvarez and Pena. And that's when you can surmise, you know, just trust what your eyes are seeing, that, you know what, right now, not even at the halfway point of the major league season, this is the best team in baseball.
The critique, I think, was the decision to pitch to Judge both times, though, right? I think that was the reason why
sure.
a lot of people, and I was more critical of the first time than I was the second time. I was more critical in that ninth inning walk-off single that I guess it was Stanek that gave up, because Presley had already wet the bed and they brought Stanek in at that point, I think. But the 10th inning one to Seth Martinez, I believe that it was.
Yeah, it was a hanging 83-mile-per-hour slider.
Slider, right, which Adam Spillane was on within the loop earlier in the week, I believe it was Wednesday, and mentioned the reason why that sort of made more sense to attack Judge with Martinez's slider, which is his best pitch,
mm-hmm.
versus Martinez facing Rizzo, yeah. a left-hander who lefties, Martinez does not throw the slider to. He does not throw his best pitch to lefties, and he would have been without his best pitch against a lefty with no room for error with the bases loaded.
Sure.
So you could make the argument based off of that. Like, to me, what that says is you were going to lose that game. You were either going to walk Aaron Judge, and then Anthony Rizzo was going to tear you up, or what happened was going to happen, which is Aaron Judge being better than
yeah,
everybody.
I mean, I get it. Like, when you believe so much in the analytics and that's what yeah. you're going to ride with, like, I get that logic, you
yeah.
know, but he might not have. He might have gotten to overswing and pop one up, or you never know.
Right, but like, the matchup tells you, though, based off of the pitch, that he – stood a better chance of getting a right-hander out, even though it's Aaron Judge.
That makes perfect sense.
With a slider than yeah. Rizzo without his best pitch.
A lefty's going to see a pitch from a right-hander, especially one that throws like a sweeping slider.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to see that longer out of the hand.
Yeah. Well, you can't play with the zone the same either, though,
because right.
the bases are loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, on top of the fact that you don't have your
sure,
your
but
pitch.
I would just argue this, like, to your larger point, like, yeah, Dusty made maybe some mistakes and stuff like that, but how many mistakes did Aaron Boone make in that series, too?
Oh, yeah,
because
sure.
Because the Astros beat him pretty good too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, good managers are going to make bad mistakes sometimes in the course of a game, in the course of a week, season, whatever.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
It was an unenviable position. So yeah, but I think that you know, just like when you look back on it, the Astros, you know, I've said this before. This was important because they had not played anybody. And for this to be the way that they
yeah.
performed,
yeah.
to me, is sort of the bigger takeaway. It's not just that they won, but the way that they won. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Dominant pitching.
Were you looking at this series or these series against the Mets and Yankees kind of like as, you know, they need to prove their worth against, you know, these more elite teams, like teams that are in their class, like. And it's kind of like ironic because you should already believe that this
yeah,
team is really good anyway.
Prove, but isn't the right word, but I wanted to see it.
Because yeah.
I believed it, but it felt like it felt a little bit, not just like blind faith. It just wasn't there. For example, honestly, all of this is not their fault because they did had just played the White Sox, right? But the White Sox even are flailing, right? They should be a winning team.
Should be better than they are.
They should
yeah.
be better than they are, and they're not. So you would think. And at least a team, okay, in the AL West should be better. Like, there's no team in the AL West truly worth a damn besides the Astros,
again.
Which is not the Astros' fault.
No.
but they do play in the AOS. So you're thinking, okay, well, if the Angels are worth a damn, then you don't have to hold it against the Astros that they ain't played nobody.
Yeah.
If the Mariners are worth a damn, then you don't have to hold it against the Astros that they ain't played against nobody. If the Rangers spending all that damn money actually translated into something, and funny enough, they turned out to be one of the better ones of all the ones that are fighting for second place. You know what I mean? So it's not their fault. So I don't want to say prove, but this is just where we were in the schedule.
I've said for a long time, like, you know, baseball, you know, for your team is just more fun when you're playing within a competitive division. You go back years, like when we were, you know, kiddos and the Astros were in the NL Central, you know, it was the Cardinals, it was the Reds, and the Cubs were routinely there.
Yep.
You know, those obviously within the division, those were the Astros rivals, but man, they beat up on each other. You're playing each other 17, 18, 19 times a season each. And of course you have the Braves to deal with, who always seem to be a thorn in the Astros side, especially in the postseason. Padres were always, you know, just kind of a bugaboo as well. But, you know, you go to the AL West, and now that the Astros are good, and they've been good now for, you know, about the last five, six seasons, really five, dating back to the World Series year of 2017, baseball's just more fun when your division's competitive. However, I wonder if it's flawed logic a little bit, too, in the sense that while I wish the Astros played in a more competitive AL West, like, the Yankees certainly are playing in a uber-competitive AL East with the Red Sox, Jays, Rays. I mean, they're all right there just beating the hell out of each other. Now, granted, the Yankees have a 13 or 12-game lead right now on the Red Sox, but those other teams are pretty damn good themselves.
Yeah.
Yankees just are a tier better. But I wonder if it's worked out for the Astros, like, over the last 5 years, that they haven't had to, you know, kill themselves, you know, 19 times against the Angels, 19 times against the Mariners, 19 times against the Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
When the Yankees, I mean, it's full throttle because you have to compete and claw and tooth and nail your way, you know, through that division in the AL East. I wonder if it's kind of worked out, like if it's benefited the Astros that they've kind of not been able to cruise, but they haven't sweat as much within their division as the Yankees have in theirs.
Yeah,
does it make sense?
Yeah, no, if as like, as a fan, like if you were to ask me as a fan, hey, would you rather be in a division with, let's just take right now, the current state of affairs right now, July 1st, 2022. Would you rather be in a division with the Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Tampa Bay Rays? Or would you rather play the Mariners, the Angels, and the A's and the Rangers every day? Like, yeah. No, I think for sure.
Like, you're going to go the easy way out, right? You're going to go the easy way out.
Yeah, I would pick it for sure.
But, you know, from a fan perspective, I'm looking at, like, man, series, like, six different series in the course of a season with the Red Sox. How fun would that be?
Yes.
How fun would that be with 100%. Toronto, you know, and the Houston connections that you have up there? Just like that's
even,
how
even
I
the
look
Rays,
at it.
Even the Rays who you've faced in the postseason, all of them, every one of those four teams.
Routinely, you're involved in more competitive, more heightened, more big stage type series throughout the course of a season where it's like, oh, here we go, Astros, and yay, silver boot. Rangers suck, you know, it's like, you're not looking forward to that series. Like, the silver boot thing is so overplayed. Like, that would be a little bit more intriguing and interesting in if they were actually good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm glad that we can, this is a safe space, I assume, that we can admit, I don't give a damn about that silver boot.
I haven't ever. It's
I
like,
don't care.
That was one of the cockamamie things that came along with, you know, the trip to the AL West.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. Growing up, because they didn't factor into each other's future, and we would get Rangers games depending on our cable package.
Yeah.
I wasn't a Rangers fan, but I would watch some of their games. And like, again, I'm not a fan, but I'd be like, okay, cool, the Rangers won. Good for them. You know, I'm not invested, but I'd watch some of their games. And so, like, now we're supposed to be these intense rivals, and they ain't been good since we've been in the American League. So just like, it's almost like, and I hate to say this because I know there's a bunch of Texans fans listening, but it's almost like how Cowboys fans probably would feel about a rivalry with the Texans. They're like, you know what? We've been here. We've been successful in the past. And y'all are like this is like a new thing. You know, that's football. So it's a lot different because football rates differently.
I guess where I was going to go, but also the history still, between those two cities.
Cities is different.
And because it's football, you know, because you can make the cities argument in baseball too.
Sure, right.
Because football commands so much more emotion. It happens less. It's a once a week type of thing. And for a Texan versus Cowboys situation, it's once every 4 years.
Right.
And you switch places every 4 years. So you might not get to go to a game, but once every 8 years and see those teams.
Yeah.
So that's what makes that rivalry special. And then too, like, I don't know where the head to head lies between the Texans and Cowboys. I feel like it's pretty even.
Yeah. See,
like I feel that way, but I could be totally wrong. Like, I couldn't name a time in which the Texans beat the Cowboys aside from the inaugural game, like off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And they've played each other 5 times over the course of the last 20 years, right?
Yeah.
At least 4 times.
I'm the wrong person to judge a Houston-Dallas rivalry because I actually grew up unaware of it. Dallas, to me, might as well be Philadelphia because that's how it's 4 hours away. We didn't go up taking trips there. So it wasn't until I got older and followed sports a lot closer. And then I went to Sam Houston State where there's a hodgepodge of Houston and Dallas people.
Yeah.
And there was a rivalry there. But I did not grow up with it, not just not hate, but like any feelings at all towards Dallas. I'm one of the few people that's like that.
I can understand that. Like off the top of my head right now, and I could probably think for a while and not come up with an answer. Like, I don't even really know where the impetus of that came. Like, why is there, you know, the Houston-Dallas rivalry thing? Like, I'd be interested to hear John McClain's perspective on that because he would certainly know.
Similar city. One thing I'll say about both of them are awesome cities. Like, I'll give Dallas that much credit. Like, I go to – whenever I've been, I've had a good time, and I've – when I go there,
you can have a good time anywhere.
This is a crap town. So, like, I think it's just that they're both big, really good cities, and they're like fighting over superiority. Which, you know, obviously Houston is the better city, but
I guess.
But I think that's what it is.
Being too nice to Dallas right now, bro.
It's similarly situated. It's really big, spacious. You know, I think that's what it is. Now, we're better, obviously.
They don't know what the hell they want over there. They don't know if they want to call themselves Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, like this megaplex, you know, whatever. They got that stupid building with the ball on top.
I feel like they just now got HEB, which for me is like, you're for sure Oklahoma or not Texas, you know, when y'all ain't really up on the HEB trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell's wrong
with them. We keep HEB down here. That's our thing, right?
Yeah. I'll hoard HEB. Why not?
We deserve that.
The more the merrier.
We ain't giving Dallas anything else. 713-572-4610. 572-4610. You can call or text. He's B. Scott. Sean Bajani with you in for Payne and Pendergast. Coming up next, Kevin Durant demanding a trade out of Brooklyn. Where is he likely to land? How that affects the Rockets? And what does their future look like? We'll get to a little bit of the NBA stuff. And I told B. Scott I wanted to revisit some a key point on Alex Bregman. We'll get to that next at Sports Radio 610.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.